Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're going to talk about your options to stay active as the cold temperatures finally stick around. If you're not comfortable or able to get to your gym or maybe to your pool, there might be some at-home options that are a good fit for you. And if you want to brave the cold weather, you can layer smartly and still get outside. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you with us.
It is awesome to be here, Larry.
Well, it's awesome to have you here. Oh, my goodness me. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to have you with us.
It's great to be here and talk about this great topic.
It is a great topic. And as you listen to these two visit, you may have some questions about home workouts or equipment. You need advice from a physical therapist. Join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's start with you, Jill. This winter and cold weather season has a few challenges when it comes to exercising. I know for some people, the indoor gyms and pools aren't an option. They're not safe for COVID, among other things. So we're going to have to be creative. Is that something you're talking about with your clients right now?
Absolutely. You know, there's no bad weather in Wisconsin, just bad clothing. So this is the time where people need to start thinking about developing a plan for how they're going to maintain or improve their physical activity as we head into these colder temperatures. We have less daylight right now. And so those are the kind of things we need to consider. And so instead of paying for a gym membership, you might find that your money is allocated differently. It might be allocated to things like snowshoes, for example, or cross-country skis, and appropriate clothing to make sure that you're layered appropriately when you're performing these outdoor activities.
You know, I'm always more worried about my feet than I am anything else, Lori and Jill. And I went and bought myself an early Christmas present, and they have arrived, a pair of ice bugs
for my feet.
So nice. There's some little studs on the bottom, 16 studs on the bottom of those shoes, and you will not slip on the ice.
I remember when the woman called into the show talking about these.
She was from Alaska.
Yep. That's right. So good for you, Larry. That's a great investment. It's a wonderful investment.
Something for the feet. Laura, what about you? Any comments on what Jill had to say?
Well, yeah, I'd like my sister to know that I'm going to put that on my Christmas list as well. So get out your pen and pencil.
So
exercise equipment. And, you know, the thing that I keep telling people, and it's funny because I had a phone call with a friend last night who asked me about buying a Peloton bike for home. And I said, well, my advice is always know thyself. So if you're somebody who likes to bike, who can sit on a bike for extended periods of time, and you like to engage and compete and better your previous times or compete or ride with other people, then an expensive bike such as a Peloton is useful. For me, that time on a bike is a time when I don't want to engage with anybody. So I would never get an expensive bike that allowed me to compete or go for a ride with other people. That's my time to myself. So I think you need to think about what it is that you like to do, not what you think you should do or what your friends tell you you should do. You need to know what works for you and what your preferences are and work with that.
You know,
right?
What?
Go ahead, Larry.
I was going to say, well, Kathy in Presque Isle, Wisconsin has something that fits, I think, right in with what you guys are talking about here. Let's go to Kathy in Presque Isle.
Hi. See, I have a question. We have a small group of women up here. We're all over 65, and we used to get together and exercise in our community center, which is now closed. So we're doing it on Zoom, and it's working out very well. We're doing a lot of different exercises, but we're always looking for something new, something different that we could do that would help with balance. Could you suggest anything?
Jill, what do you think?
Well, there are some wonderful apps out there. And, you know, Lori had mentioned the Peloton bike. Peloton has an app for your phone that is $13 a month that has, my understanding, that has some yoga-based movements and some resistance training movements on there that you can do with little or no equipment at home. So some of the yoga-type movements, Kathy, might be something that would be really good for you. And I'm really glad that you and your group are interested in balance. The risk of falls is very high as we age. You mentioned that you were all over the age of 65. So focusing on exercises that improve balance is actually ideal for you. So if you can find an app that has a yoga-based or a balance-based activities, that would be great. Lori, I don't know if you know of any off the top of your head.
Not balance stuff. I sort of think about the strategies that I use when I see patients for improving balance. So if there are exercises that you already do that are in a standing position, some of those can be modified by narrowing your base of support. That is, instead of doing those, maybe you're doing some arm exercises with some light weights or something. Instead of doing them with your feet wide apart, which is your natural predisposition because it stabilizes you, bring your feet closer together. So narrow your base of support. Or practice standing in the position we call tandem, and that is heel toe. So just if you're having a break between a couple exercises, practice standing heel toe and bringing your arms in across your chest. If you're successful at that, then close your eyes. So the big modifications for balance are taking anything that you're already doing and narrowing your base of support, or closing your eyes. And closing your eyes is a big one because most of our balance is oriented around vision, around what we see. So you can take any exercise you're already doing, and as long as you're safe, try closing your eyes. We also, for example, in the pool, we have people do a box waltz where you step forward, side together, back side together, just in a box like you're waltzing. And then we have people close their eyes and do that. So those are simple things that you can integrate into your existing exercise program that require really no equipment.
Yeah.
And I think Lori brings up a really good point. So many of the exercise programs that we do involve moving forward. So to do some movements or motions that have sidestepping or backward stepping, like the box, as Lori mentioned, is a great strategy.
And the other issue about closing your eyes that I think is really important, particularly as we age, is people often get up during the night to use the bathroom, and that's a low light condition. So being comfortable with knowing where your feet are in space in a low light condition, I think is really important as we get older.
Yep. All right. Kathy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You mentioned one or maybe both of you mentioned apps. Are there a lot of tapes or videos out there? There are on the internet that are useful that you have found to be particularly useful.
Well, this is like any exercise activity. There's a ton of information out there, and it's finding the level or the activity that's right for you. So there's tons of things on YouTube. There's lots of apps out there, and you just have to find something that works for you. If you belong to a health club, sometimes they've created an app within their health club, and so then you would be very familiar with the classes or the activities they offer, and that might be a really good place to start. Other things like professional organizations like the Arthritis Foundation, if they have an exercise or an activity app, and I'm not sure if they do, that would be a really good place to start. You want to start with somebody who's got a really good reputation and make sure that the level of the activity is appropriate with where you are. I think that's the biggest thing, is so many of these apps that are out there and so many of the exercises that are out there are very, very, very high level. And it might be what we aspire to, but it's not where we're starting.
Yeah, so that's so true.
It's important to find something that is the level that meets your needs where you are right now to take you to those higher goals.
So here at UW Health, we have exercise classes that are being provided online. So fitness center members here or people who log in or can access the UW Health Fitness Center website, we have videos up for people. And when you're looking, as Jill said, at some of these online, see if any of them label them as beginner, intermediate, or advanced. So that will give you a clue as well.
And the other thing is many of these might have a week free trial, and I would strongly encourage you to do that before you commit to a purchase. If it's a application or something, a membership that you need to purchase, to make sure that, as Lori said, you know thyself and you're going to be compliant with it and it's an appropriate level for you. So it may take a little shopping around before you find the one that's right for you.
Yeah, same thing like the Peloton app that you talked about at the beginning. There are a number of different instructors within that app, and you may find that, yes, I like the app from, you know, this organization, but I like instructor A better than instructor B because of how they teach or the level that they're teaching at or how they teach me as I'm doing my exercises, how to do it or what to watch out for.
Let's take another call. Ed in McFarland will give you a chance. Hi, Ed.
Hello. Question, I got lower back pain that I have had for a long time. I'm 56 years old. Probably 10 years ago, I had an athletic event that I felt right in the middle of my back where I've had kind of off and on pain through most of my life, like I said. But this particular athletic event, I got bent backwards. I was wrestling, and I just excruciating moment of pain during that event. I just really took it easy for the next month, and it gradually got back to its normal, I guess, amount of pain. But now, 10 years after that, it just keeps getting worse, or over those 10 years, I should say, it's always getting more aggravating and more painful to deal with. My general family doc, on my last kind of physical, probably 2 years ago, I mentioned my back pain, and he said, well, they don't like, nowadays surgery is most often not the answer. Physical therapy is. I've never went in to get any physical therapy. I just continue to deal with it. But I wonder for you guys, the question is, as I understand, surgery does help some situations, but not, it's rare that surgery helps. Or they suggest not surgery to solve this kind of thing.
It'd be rare to have surgery before there was any physical therapy involved, wouldn't there, Jill?
Absolutely. So it sounds to me like, Ed, you had this major injury 10 years ago and it's gotten progressively worse. Are all your symptoms still in the spot where this injury occurred 10 years ago? Is that still your location of pain?
Yes. Yep. It's about a third up from my tailbone. I was right in the lower kind of, and it's right in the spine, it feels like. And I should mention, I do yoga. I'm very physically active my whole life, and I still am. I stretch most mornings and evenings. I mean, there's rarely, at least, I don't do one good stretch a day. I work out, I run, do all kind of CrossFit-ish kind of stuff. And
well, that's great.
I think longer to loosen that thing up, but anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things to promote your overall health and wellness. The big question is, are these stretches you're doing and these activities you're doing beneficial to strengthen or mobilize or identify the issues with your injuries? So it's as compliant and motivated as you are to do physical activity, seeing a physical therapist would be very, very helpful for you. You know, roughly 80% of the population incurs one episode of low back pain within their lifetime. Yours is lingering on. And I think getting you on a good course of care would be very helpful for you to keep you active and minimize your pain.
Yeah. Good luck, Ed. go in, see a physical therapist and get some advice there.
If it was going to get better, it would have been better a long time ago.
That's right.
Yep. So with an extension injury, my guess is you did some damage with that extension injury.
Yep.
And it may or may not have healed. So.
Yep.
Good luck, Ed. Thank you. Judy in Green Bay will give you a chance. And we'll give you a chance right after I remind you all that our guests today are Jill Tine Nissenbaum and Lori Tine Brody from the UW. Natalie Gayatz, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today, and we're zeroing in a bit today on exercise and cold weather and how to keep exercising during that cold weather. Jill Tine Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Lori Tine Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Our guests. If we're missing the gym, what about equipment? You mentioned, the Peloton's come up a couple times, but are there other pieces of equipment that might not cost that much or useful pieces of equipment? Jill, do you want to start?
I think there's a lot of different pieces of equipment out there that individual could consider purchasing. First of all, if you belong to a gym and there's a piece of equipment that you feel you consistently use, you enjoy, that would be a place to start. And you may not have to invest a lot of money in it because many used stores or secondhand sporting goods stores probably offer that equipment and you can purchase it at a less of a price. I bought snowshoes last week at Played Against Sports. So I found a pair there I really liked. I needed a new pair. So Lori, that's my Christmas present from you.
All right. Very good. I'll send you I'll Venmo you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know that you want to race out, as Lori alluded to, and spend lots and lots of money on a piece of equipment, particularly one that you've never used before. For example, if you've never used a rowing machine, I wouldn't go out and purchase that first. That wouldn't be my priority. Lori, I know, has a recumbent bike at home that she uses very religiously, and that's something that works for her. We have an elliptical in our basement that works for us. But it's a piece of equipment that, for example, my husband and I both found would be beneficial for both of us. We could both use it, and we're both comfortable on it. So I think those are the things you need to consider.
Yeah, right, I think Judy, you also need to think about how long the pandemic is potentially going to last. realistically, if you belong to a gym and you're thinking that, boy, as soon as that gym opens up, that's where I'm going to go and that's my preference, then you may not want to invest in anything very expensive right now.
Connie in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Connie.
Hi. For balance, I would like to put a substantial vote forward for Tai Chi. I began my time with Tai Chi about 4 years ago when the UW Physical Therapy Department, I think, was doing a significant research project with over 65-year-old adults. And I thought I would be so bored, but I thought it's near my house. It's in a good part of the morning. It's two times a week. I'm interested in learning more. And I became so hooked, and I moved on then to more advanced study. But the degree of additional sensitivity to proprioception and the security of being able to stand on a narrow, short base, the one-legged postures, that develops in a very natural kind of way, especially given that there has been really beautiful work by Patricia Yu and others in physical therapy on adapting the more complex movements of the martial art into something that has a different purpose, which is more balance training. So that's my first substantial vote on balance, because, of course, fall prevention is high priority. The second thing I want to say is to suggest that people try Nordic pole walking. I have found that growing two more legs by extending my hands to give me, when I'm walking, a completely different experience of walking. It is not really like walking. It is a very powerful experience that involves the upper body. And I recently, it looks a little funny when you start, but you see more and more people doing it outside. So it doesn't really, I don't really care about what it looks like because I enjoy it so much. It feels completely different. But recently I bought a pair, I was given a pair for my birthday of a slightly refined version of such a Nordic pull, which, you know, originally they were based on simply adapting ski poles, cross-country ski poles to walking. But the new version that I got is something called a pacer pole, P-A-C-E-R-P-O-L-E. I found out about them in an odd kind of way. They were invented by the handle was invented by a woman in England. And if you read her website, you will read from one side of the page to the other the physiological reasons why the biomechanics of this particular handle is better. But honestly, if all you do is just put your hand on it, you can see immediately why it's
better.
And so it's like going into a race car instead of into a diesel truck. So pacer poles and Tai Chi.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Comments, Jill, start with you.
Absolutely. So Tai Chi is a wonderful form of balance training, and I'm so glad you brought that up. There are some wonderful studies going on through the physical therapy program at the University of Wisconsin looking at Tai Chi for balance. So I'm so glad you're participating in that. And Lori, I've heard recommend numerous times walking poles or poles to add that extra 1 or 2 feet on the ground, for example, with walking. And it's great to hear how it changes the experience for you and the recommendation of the poles you made. So I think that's those are both great things to talk about in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Thank you. Jill, go ahead. Or Lori, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So one of the cautions about Tai Chi is, as she was alluding to, is spending time standing on a single leg. And one of the issues for people who are older is standing on a single leg for any length of time, and particularly if you're standing and rotating on a leg, can really wreak havoc with arthritic knees and hips. So we have to be a little bit careful about jumping into Tai Chi or standard Tai Chi that has a lot of single leg balance. So you might want to start out with a beginner level or somebody who has modified the Tai Chi. So you're spending more time standing on 2 feet to avoid flaring hips and knees.
Mm, good points. Judy, thanks again. Appreciate it. John in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like your guest comments on these electronic foot baths. I'm 86 years old. I walk or try to walk 3 to 6 miles a week, but boy, my feet can be killing me, throbbing or whatever when I'm done. And I haven't walked now for a week just to get my feet back to normal. Any advice, comments?
Are you talking about those sort of water bath, spa, massager things?
When you say electric foot bath,
but is that what you mean? The ones where you put your feet in the water and they massage?
Yeah.
Correct. Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay. All right. So, there's nothing wrong with those. If they make your feet feel better at the end of your walk or the end of your day, then by all means use those. So the question is, why do your feet hurt so much? Is this something new since you started walking?
Well, I've been walking for years. You know, it's just
okay.
It just seems to, you know, today, you know, I'm in Green Bay, you know, and the trails, great trail system, but everything is you're walking on asphalt. And
right.
I don't know if that's part of the problem. I do use a walking stick all the time, and, you know, it's
what
just,
about shoes?
Right. Right.
I have spent hundreds of dollars on shoes, you know, with these springs in the heels and special inserts and stuff, and I still have the problem.
Okay. So have you seen a physical therapist at all about your foot problems?
Yes, I've gone through that, taken medicines, pills, you know.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. Sometimes the issue is some of your foot anatomy, your foot structure, and even the lower, your alignment of your lower extremity in general. So if you have seen physical therapists and they've looked at the mobility of your hips, knees, and your feet, we've looked at your foot posture, they've worked on stretching and strengthening exercises around your feet and ankles, and you're able to walk, but your feet hurt, then there's nothing wrong with the massager when you get back to make your feet feel better. Jill, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think that's a great idea. And I think that's a very appropriate use of it. And I if it helps, that's absolutely great. There's nothing that makes it contraindicated per se.
Yeah, we would just want to make sure that you're not using it to make your feet feel better without having taken the time to see if there's any underlying reason why you're still having so much pain in your feet. So we want to make sure you've seen your doctor, you've seen your physical therapist, and you've tried all those other interventions to prevent the foot pain rather than just treating it on the backside.
Right.
Good luck, John. Thank you so much for calling. We had a caller wondering whether she could find an adjustable pull-up bar to snugly fit her doorway inside. She doesn't have access to the internet, so she's looking for an in-store recommendation for a pull-up bar.
Well, you might try the sporting goods stores. That's probably where I'd go.
Right. I would try a sporting goods store or a used sporting goods store as well. I know exactly what she's talking about. We have one in our basement that hooks over a door. It doesn't require any drilling or screws or anything like that. It's kind of a 3-point counter pressure system. And I think that's probably one of a thing to look for. And I would start a sporting goods store or a used sporting goods store to see if you can find it there.
Yeah.
Let's take
if there's somebody handy, you could probably do it with a handyman.
Exactly.
Probably. Judy in Green Bay. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a problem I hope they can help me with. I've always walked for exercise 30 to 40 minutes a day, except in the winter when I've used a treadmill. But when the gyms closed in March because of COVID, I went back outdoors and I started walking. And after a week and a half to 2 weeks, my hip and my knee on the left side hurt so badly, I thought I'd better stop. So then I switched to biking. I biked all summer with absolutely no problems. I played tennis all summer, absolutely no problems. But as it's gotten colder, I've gone back to the walking. And the first week, no problem. And now by the second week, I can only do it 3 times a week rather than every day, which is what I'd like to do. And I wonder if I could get my doctor to give me a referral to physical therapy without seeing him. Is that something a physical therapist is likely to be able to help with without a doctor's diagnosis or any kind of x-rays?
Absolutely. So it sounds to me like there's something with the movement pattern of walking, and it's only on one side. So that's interesting. So why are you favoring, you know, the left side? Why is the left side painful and not the right? Biking, you're having no difficulty with. That should be a very symmetrical activity. You're having no difficulty playing tennis. So physical therapists could help investigate what it is about walking, particularly outside, that's giving you this trouble. So they may investigate the path you're taking, the route you're taking, shoe wear, footwear, and do an assessment. So So in the state of Wisconsin, you can see a physical therapist without a referral. It just depends upon if your insurance will reimburse physical therapy without a referral. So your physician can write one, but in the state of Wisconsin, you don't need one.
So typically what we suggest people do is call the clinic where you would, like to attend physical therapy, give them your information and your insurance, and they can tell you whether or not you will need a referral in order for your insurance to pay for that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you could play tennis, which is a running, starting, stopping sport, but not the walking. So there's something about the walking that's a little bit different than the running that you do in tennis. So yes, a physical therapist could certainly help you with that.
Good luck, Judy. Thank you so much. Deborah in Monona, we're on to you now. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am wondering if your guests have any suggestions on what to do when you know you're going to fall. A couple of weeks ago, I was hiking along the river, and I tripped on a stick that was buried by leaves, and I stuck my hand out. And I know that was wrong, but you know, is there anything, any way you should put your body when you know you're going to fall?
Well, that's a really good question. So the standard approach is to put your hand out. So the question is, for you as an individual, you know, what is your greatest risk? So if you bring your hand in and you land on your side, you can actually break your clavicle. So the load is going to be shifted from your wrist and hand up to your shoulder or your elbow, or potentially your hip if you land on your hip instead of breaking the fall with your hand. So there's not a great strategy other than sort of doing a quick assessment of what's around you and how you can fall most safely. So if there's a way you can, you know, sort of turn your body and land on your tush, that's probably the most cushioned area that you have. But in terms of the fall, you know, sort of if you can land on both hands instead of one to distribute the fall over both sides and then sort of give with it and roll with it instead of trying to abruptly stop yourself. So you think about, for example, people in martial arts, when they go down and they roll. So rather than trying to just stop abruptly, trying to move your body so that either you accept the load with both hands and then flex your elbows to absorb the shock, or to break the fall somewhat, but then flex and roll with it. If you can't see me, I'm rolling my body. Flex and roll with it.
Good luck,
definitely,
Deborah.
So yeah, let me say you. One more thing. Let me say one more thing about that. And that is that the ability to get up off the ground after you've fallen is a really good predictor of morbidity and mortality. That is, as well as independence as you get older. So sometimes I see people who have had a hip replacement or a knee replacement, and they just choose to not get up and down off the floor anymore because it's inconvenient and awkward. But at some point, you're going to lose the mobility and the skill set to get up off the floor. So if you are out hiking and you fall, you may not be able to get back up. So I feel like it's really important for people to continue practicing getting up and down from the floor. Inside is a little bit easier because you can often crawl to a piece of furniture, but that's often not true outside. If you go outside in the winter and you slip, you know, on the pavement and fall, there's nothing to crawl to get up. So I think it's important to continue practicing that skill and not give it up because it's difficult.
Right. Good points.
Good suggestions. And thank you, Deborah. Anita in Lindenhurst, Illinois. On to you now. Hi, Anita.
Hi, this is a very timely program. I think we need this once a month until May. But during the days of BC, before COVID, I belonged to a fitness club, and also we'd go out dancing frequently. So those were all good things for this 73-year-old. But here's the thing is that in the winter, it's hard for me to go out and do things that are aerobic because I have asthma, and it brings its own set of problems. And I just thought, let's just dance indoors. And I do Tai Chi, that's okay. But the dancing indoors, it's just such a fun thing, even if you don't have a partner, because it entails using your brain also. Because if you're trying to do some sort of dance, you have to think about it, and it makes you shift your weight constantly back and forth. Not only that, if you're moving your feet a little bit fast or your legs fast, you know, my leg doctor years ago said, you know, that will keep the circulation going up. It'll send the blood flow where it needs to go, so then maybe your feet wouldn't hurt quite so much. But the trick is you don't just set aside time to dance. If you put on some music that you really like that makes your body want to get up and kind of move a little bit to it, That's it. That's the appetizer to get you away from the computer and get up and dance. And it brings such joy. And during this winter, we need more of that.
Anita, that's thank you so,
so
much.
True.
Lori,
I really like that activity. It's something that we've talked about before on the show. But one of the things, circling back to our show last month where we talked about osteoporosis, dancing gives you those odd forces. I think Jill talked about odd forces last time, that not just walking where you're doing the same pattern over and over and walking just forward and back, but you're moving in unusual directions. And it's really good for improving your bone density. It's great for balance. It's great for coordination, as she stated.
And this is obviously, she's very passionate about this. To find an exercise or activity that brings you this much joy is a win-win, because the compliance will be higher. It's just, that's what you need to do. So as Lori said earlier, do what makes you happy, not what you think should make you happy.
Yeah. My daughter has a few DVDs of music where you watch on the screen and the music plays and there's somebody dancing and you mimic I can't remember what it's called now, but I'm telling you, I've done this with her in front of the TV set, and it's a pretty good workout by the time you're done, and it is fun. It is fun.
Well, and I think the coordination, the cognitive stimulation, and the fact that you have to concentrate on what's on TV while moving your legs, that's a great activity for your mind cognitively as well as physically for your lower extremities. So I think that's a great idea.
Kind of fun to do it with your own daughter, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's thank you again, Anita. Appreciate it very much. Erica in Lake Tomahawk, your turn. Hi.
Well, hello there. About a year ago, there was a lady called in and recommended, said she walked backwards and it had really helped a lot about her. And I do that a lot. I have a corgi who thinks this is bizarre and deviant behavior when I do it out on the logging roads, and he barks and barks and barks. But we've gotten past that. But it really has helped me. I'm 66, and I still haul propane up. Right now I'm in Presque Isle in the snow. But I think that has helped me an awful lot, balance and strength in my butt and in the back of my legs. It's helped me a lot.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, walking backwards is a great activity, and I often encourage people to do it. Sometimes people are a little reluctant to do it, or they don't feel safe. And one of the things that I often suggest is going to a high school track where it's a little bit safer to do that. So I'll tell them, you know, on the curves, walk forward. But when you get to the straightaways, walk backwards, because you have kind of a straight shot and you can see pretty well for a distance.
We had a thank you again for calling. We had a listener who emailed with a follow up from last show. Speaking of past shows, talking about core strength, they emailed to say they've been toying with that belly button muscle, stabilizing the lower back you mentioned last time you were on. They're experiencing less back pain, and it's almost effortless to engage, as if it's saying, well, it's about time you remembered me. The listener's wondering what two or three exercises, isometric or dynamic, that might be good to rebuild those muscles after years of a neglect. How many times a day and how often should they do those as well?
So that's a great question. That person's talking about their transversus abdominis, which is a deep core stabilizer in your low back. And so one of the cues to get that to fire is to kind of pull your belly button down and back. Other cues I give people are, you just pulled a pair of jeans out of the dryer and they're a little tight, so you got to pull in just a little bit. The biggest mistake most people make is that they hold their breath. So they suck in really tight and they hold their breath. That's not correct. So you should only need to contract this muscle at between 30 and 50% of the maximal effort. So this isn't a huge 100% effort contraction. This is between 20 and 30% of the effort, and it is an endurance muscle, meaning that it should relatively be turned on all day long. So the goal would be to turn it on at that low grade and keep it on with all transitional movements in particular. So going from sit to stand, anytime you're going to lift something, you should turn it on and quote unquote brace before you lift. So in general, this exercise, or excuse me, this muscle should be on frequently throughout the day.
So, so just as you're sitting there, for all you listeners out there, you know, try to pull your belly button in, tip your pelvis back a little bit to press your low back gently against the back of your chair. The other exercise I like to give people, and there was a question about what exercises, in addition to doing that and keeping it turned on for much of the day, as Jill said, is I like to have people do what I call a hand to knee push. So people are sitting a lot these days in Zoom meetings. So if, as you're sitting there, if you just put one hand on top of the knee on the same side and try to lift up your knee as you push down with your hand, you're going to feel those muscles engage as you try to lift up your knee. It's an isometric. And you can do those all day long while you're in Zoom meetings and feel those abdominal muscles contracting. And you'll notice a difference.
Thank you so much for that question. Appreciate it very much. Jill Time Nissenbaum, Lori Time Brody, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues, we've zeroed in a bit on exercise amidst the colder weather that's here in some parts of the state and on its way in other parts of the state. Our two guests, Lori Time Brody and Jill Time Nissenbaum, both with the UW-Madison. Jill's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Lori, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Take some calls, and Justin in Black Creek, Wisconsin, has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Justin.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to mention, based off of a previous caller, she said that she was having no problems playing tennis and walking until now it's cold out. And I wanted to just kind of highlight the connection of vitamin D and inflammation. And now that we're getting into colder weather, we're wearing long clothes, and we're not exposed to the sun at all. So we're really, really, absolutely for sure losing our vitamin D levels. And I would just suggest people to look into it for themselves and see if maybe they could benefit from a supplement.
Oh, thanks,
yeah,
Justin.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Lori, you agree. Jill, yeah, nodding yes. Yeah, they agree. So it's well worth it.
Yeah, there's actually some conversation about vitamin D and COVID. So there's, you know, the research in COVID is all relatively new. As we know, it's a new thing, but there's a fair amount of discussion going on about having sufficient levels of vitamin D. So it's certainly something to discuss with your physician, but certainly in Wisconsin with less sunlight, it's really important to check your vitamin D levels. It's important in a number of health conditions. So checking with your provider about whether or not you have sufficient vitamin D in your diet and your vitamin D levels in your body are at the levels they should be at. So,
yeah, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. Jackie in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Boy, I love your show, and I especially love it when you talk about PT. I recently changed clinics, and I can't see my old PT. And through the years, I've seen many different PTs. Some have been wonderful. Some of them, although very nice people, have not been that helpful. How do you go about finding a new PT and make sure it's the right person for you?
Hmm. Interesting.
Looks like Lori, do you want to answer that one? Oh, no, you said no. Okay. So that's a great question, Jackie. First of all, you always want to find somebody that listens to you very well and listens to your goals. If there's a certain orthopedic condition or a certain impairment you have, you can find a specialist within that area. So for example, if your chief complaint or your biggest issue is musculoskeletal in nature, so joint related, looking to see if there's an orthopedic clinical specialist at your clinic is a good idea. On the other hand, if your issues are more related to neurological conditions, such as a stroke or a progressive neurological disease, then finding a neurological clinical specialist is a good strategy. There are also geriatric clinical specialists, pediatric clinical specialists, and people who specialize in women's health. So within the profession of physical therapy, you can become board certified in, I believe it's 8 different domains right now. So that's also a very good place to start to make sure that they have the clinical expertise to can best treat your condition.
Right, right. So she's absolutely right. Not unlike medicine in general, there are specialty areas within physical therapy. So as Jill said, you can be board certified in an area. She and I are both board certified in sports. So there are sports specialists. But even within that, you know, I can think of people I know, and there are people who are more of a specialist in foot. I know people who are a specialist in hips. So starting with that sort of sorting in your choosing somebody, and then thereafter finding somebody that you get along with that gives you information at the level that works for you. So somebody, as Jill said, who can listen really well and who engages you in the conversation because you are team members. It is not the physical therapist sort of dumping all their knowledge out on you, but it's a team effort from hearing what your issues are, hearing what your goals are, hearing what motivates and inspires you, and then a good physical therapist will design a program to help you achieve those goals.
And thank you very much, Jackie. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Kim in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Thanks for the program. So I've got bad knees, meniscus surgeries 30-some years ago. It's catching up to me as far as I'm bone on bone. A week ago today, I went in to get an injection in my right knee of cortisone. This is the second one. The first one lasted a year and 3 months, which is great. There's been no significant change from x-rays. But I'm still having fluid on my knee, and my concern is a week ago, I was getting into my tree stand, and I pushed off and straightened out that leg, and I had quite a bit of pain in there. And I'm wondering if there's more going on in my knee than just the bone on bone. It's lateral in the right knee.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, if you had meniscus surgery 30 years ago, unfortunately back then they were pretty generous with how much of your meniscus they removed. Now we know to only take out a very small portion. So chances are you had probably a fairly large portion of your meniscus removed. That can set you on the fast track for osteoarthritis. You had mentioned the bone on bone. What little meniscus you have left is probably quite vulnerable. So I'm wondering if when you kind of locked that knee out rapidly when you were getting in your tree stand, if that wasn't enough to irritate and perhaps do another little meniscal tear, especially if you've had a cortisone injection, had good luck with it in the past and did not see any relief. That kind of makes me think there's something mechanical in nature occurring. Lori, what do you think?
Yeah, may I ask how old you are?
I'm 60, but the lateral tear was actually quite small.
Okay. But if you had big meniscal tear and they took out a big chunk of your meniscus on the medial side, that lateral side may be taking a lot of load over the years.
Yeah, it's the meniscus is really important for load transmission from the lower leg to the upper leg, as well as providing nutrition for your joint surfaces. So when you lose the congruency of the meniscus in your knee, you start yourself on a path to rapid degeneration. And my guess is that's what's happened. So right now you are in a protect my knee at all costs phase. So A, having fluid on your knee, the fluid on your knee is A, a sign that you did something that your knee didn't like, and B, the kinds of cells that are present in that fluid are unhealthy for your joint surfaces. So walking around with fluid on your knee is both unhealthy from the chemistry point of view and also unhealthy because there's strong evidence that having that fluid on your knee shuts down your quadriceps muscles, which are your big shock absorbers for your knee. So you've lost both your meniscus as a shock absorber and now your quadriceps. So getting your knee calmed down, getting the fluid off your knee, using ice, limiting your activities is going to be really important. And then you just need to protect your knee for as long as you can until you are probably going to show up for that inevitable joint replacement.
Have you tried hyaluronic acid injections? You had mentioned a corticosteroid injection. Have you tried Synvisc, Orthovisc, any of that? Okay.
Maybe we'll find out after our break here.
Right.
Coming up, our guests today, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, I'm Larry Mueller. We will take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be right back. So you stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, our physical therapist, back with us to talk about planning out your exercise routine for the coming cold months. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Here to answer your questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And we did have Kim from Eau Claire on right at the break, Jill, talking.
Right.
It was a knee issue.
Yeah, and Kim had mentioned that he had had some corticosteroid injections into his knee, one about a year and a half ago. That was helpful. One last week, not so much. And one of the things that we started to talk about before the break was the use of hyaluronic acid or Synvisc injections. That's a brand name. And I know, Larry, you can speak to this personally because I believe that you've... Yeah, do you want to share your story?
Well, I was set to have surgery, and I, the gal, the doctor who was going to do that recommended, let's try the Synvisc, and I was two shots, maybe I think of them or three, and about 6 weeks after that, I had no pain at all, and it was just before the surgery was to be given, and I called and said, "Hey, cancel." Now, that's been 5 years ago, something like that. She
wow.
She told me, you know what, if it starts to come back and I'll shoot you up again. But I haven't had to. And I get a lot. I mean, I'm out a lot. If you're talking about steps, I look at my little monitor and, you know, it's 14,000, 15,000 steps. A day.
Good for you.
And that includes just not straight walking, but you're loading your knee differently because that would include golf and all sorts of other
yes.
activities, gardening. And so you're loading your knee in very different directions, which is great and healthy for you. And you've had a really good outcome with that. And so that hyaluronic acid injection, and depending upon what brand the physician uses. It can be a series of 3 to 5. It can be one injection. It's been shown to be beneficial in very specific populations at the knee joint. I don't believe the research has shown that it's as good at the hip, if I remember correctly, but it seems to be beneficial at the knee.
And yeah, she did tell me that it would be several weeks before I would notice, but it was at least a month before I noticed.
Okay. And Larry, you're walking on pavement, aren't you, around your neighborhood, or are you walking on a trail?
No, mostly on pavement, 99%.
So your knee has done really well, because usually pavement is harder on your knee than, for example, walking on a trail. So you've had a really good outcome with this, and good for you.
I don't skimp on shoes either. I replace my shoes 500 miles or less for sure.
Yeah, that's really important. And an important thing about shoes, and I'm glad you brought that up, is people look at the bottom of their shoes and they say, well, they're not worn out. And they may not be. But what we know is that the material properties of the shoe and the midsole fail before they look worn. So just looking at the bottom of the shoe and saying, oh, it doesn't look like there's any wear on them, doesn't speak to the ability of that shoe to absorb shock.
There you go, Kim. Thanks again for your call. Mary and Racine, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I think I wrecked my feet or something because a couple of years ago, I took up running, and I ran a couple half marathons. I'm in my 50s, so I remember after that, like, my feet hurt after I would run, but then it would go away, and I'd be fine. And then I have stopped running, but I walk a lot, and it had gone away. I guess my feet weren't hurting right before COVID. And then we were like Club Med, you know, when the shutdown happened, and we were like walking 9 miles and walking, I mean, every single day. And now I'm not walking as much, but I'm walking probably about 12,000 steps a day on average between just things I'm doing and also just my regular walk. But my feet, like when I sit down for just even 5 minutes and then get up, I'm like an elderly, I mean, like 90-year-old person. My feet hurt that bad. And I've gotten new shoes. I've tried all those things. So I just don't know what's with my feet. And it's not plantar fasciitis. Like, it's not that kind of pain. It's mainly in the ball of the foot. And then I have some, like, it almost feels bruised on the top of my foot, on my left foot.
So have you seen anybody for this, Mary?
No, because I don't know. I'm always like pushed through stuff and I can still walk. I can still walk. I mean, it doesn't stop me from walking. It doesn't stop me from getting up, you know, when I sit down. But
right. But it could. And so, you know, this is, you should get this looked at before it does start impairing you. And so it would definitely be worth seeing a physical therapist for, to make some recommendations regarding shoe wear. So you've talked a little bit about wearing good shoes and things like that. Maybe there's some muscles that are tight that need a flexibility program. Maybe you need some strengthening. Maybe they need to look up higher, for example, at your knees or your hips. So it sounds to me like you're very active and you want to stay that way. And so it'd be great to nip this in the bud before it really did start to impair your activity level. So you don't have to wait for it to get really bad before you see a physical therapist. You could see someone now, and that would be great.
Yeah, because the farther down the line you get, you're going to start substituting, you're going to change how you walk, you're going to change how you move, and then you're going to have a second problem. And when you start adding a second and third problem on top of your first, it gets really hard to sort out what was the primary problem, what came first. So it's easier to figure these things out when you have only one thing going on. So, you know, pain in the ball of your foot, bruising, you have to rule out things like a stress fracture.
Right.
So there are a number of things that could be going on there, and you need to have that sorted out before you go from bad to worse.
Good luck, Mary. Thank you for calling. John in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to give you a quick compliment. Jill and Laurie, your show is really interesting when you're on. My question today is, I was wondering what you think of weighted blankets for pain that I'm getting from sleeping. I roll from one side to the other and have pain.
Yeah.
Sunday with pain in my hip.
Yeah. Yeah. Laurie.
I love a weighted blanket. So some of our family members have weighted blankets. I know many people who have weighted blankets, and they really provide some sort of level of security. Weighted blankets are great. So the key is making sure that you get the right weight for the right weight of blanket for your body weight. And if it should help you sleep. So that may be one piece of it. And I don't know if you have other things going on. You mentioned a hip. So if you have problems in a specific joint, those may need to be addressed as a separate issue. So for example, if you have pain, you know, in your left hip, when you lie on your left side, we talk about things like a body pillow. So you can change, it provides you more sleeping positions than just a standard bed would. So the weighted blanket is certainly helpful for sleeping for a number of people. If you have specific joint issues, you might want to think about having those addressed as a separate issue.
Right. Yep, might be two things here, but for sure, a weighted blanket is a nice strategy, and then positioning is another important thing to consider.
There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Joe in Iron River, Michigan, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Larry, good to hear you.
Good to hear your voice. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to pass on a simple little exercise I do when I can't go outside walking. I have a house here with a real nice stairway that goes down, and it's well lit, and I've got a handrail. And so I just go up and down that 10 times, and boy, it really increases my heart rate without stopping. And it does my legs good, and I can indicate how good I feel when I do that. And I can do that one or two times a day. And it helped me stay really good at age 80.
Wow. Good for you,
That's
Joe.
That's fantastic. So I think Joe brought up a lot of really good points. It's well lit. There's a railing should he need it. And I'm sure he's wearing good shoes that aren't slippery. And so it's a stairwell or a stairway he's very familiar with. And so that's a really good activity to do. Up and down the stairs is a great indoor option for people. Another thing that Lori always says, before you sit down, do 10 squats before you sit down. So that's another simple activity that people can incorporate into their daily routine that doesn't require equipment.
Yeah. The other thing to think about when you're going up and down the stairs is to make sure you have your cell phone with you in case you like get to the bottom or you would trip or whatever, that you have that phone available. But you're absolutely right. When I was in the early COVID days, when I was screening at the hospital during my breaks, I would go walk up and down the stairwells at the hospital for exercise. So it is a fabulous exercise. You're absolutely right. So thanks for bringing that up, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Well, Rick in Sparta, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Rick.
Hey there, and good morning.
Morning.
I really don't know where to start for your guest. I'm full of arthritis. I get shots in my back, I don't know, every 3 months. And now they've started with my hip. They say some nerves or something that go to my spinal column out the side are driving my hip nuts. So they went in and did some kind of a shot. I think it's just cortisone down in my hip socket. Where is this all going to end? I'm almost 70 years old.
Okay, in your late 60s. Okay.
So, well, you know, Rick, I don't know if you've been to physical therapy. But typically we help people manage their pain when they have arthritis in many different joints. One of the things we often find when people have pain and arthritis in multiple joints is that they do well in a pool because we can work on so many joints at the same time. And it doesn't require you, for example, getting up and down off the floor or getting in positions that you might be unable to do because of arthritis in, for example, your knees or your hips. And so you can't get on all fours or get on your stomach or whatever. So if you haven't been to physical therapy, I would suggest starting there and getting some simple exercises you can do to help strengthen your back. And that will help offload some of those nerves in your back that are wreaking havoc with your hips.
Right.
Thank you. And good luck, Rick. Sorry for your issues, but get in there and see a physical therapist.
Yeah, this is an issue that we see often, Larry, that people have arthritis in their backs and it can cause symptoms down their legs. And so they come in with hip pain and they're not sure if it's a hip problem or a back problem. They often get bounced back and forth between the back specialist and the hip specialist. The hip specialist saying, no, it's coming from your back. And the back person saying, no, it's coming from your hip. And it can be really difficult. And it speaks right. a little bit to the caller Mary earlier, where we said it's easier to sort out your problems when you have one problem. But when you have arthritis in your hips and you have arthritis in your back, it gets hard to sort out what is the source of your pain. So they go in and they do a shot in your back, which is what they did for Rick, and they see if it resolves his symptoms. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And then the patient says, well, geez, I had this shot and it didn't help. Well, part of it is trying to figure out what the source of your pain is so that the intervention can be addressed at the right place. But it's very complicated when you have arthritis in multiple joints, as Rick does.
Yeah. Rick, thank you again for calling. Carol emailed with a question. Her husband's currently undergoing cancer treatment, sits most of the time. It's been recommended he try to get more exercise, and wondering if you could recommend an exercise for him. I don't have an age for the person, but currently undergoing cancer treatment.
Right. And so one of the things that we encourage is very short, frequent bouts of exercise for this individual. And starting with large muscle groups would be very helpful. So something as simple as what we talked about earlier, perhaps it's if they have a flight of stairs and the patient has good balance going up and down a flight of stairs frequently throughout the day, or doing some squats before the patient sits, and making sure that that activity is sprinkled, small doses sprinkled throughout the day to really kind of respect the individual's fatigue, because that's something we see many times with patients that are undergoing treatment for cancer, is that they need short bouts of frequent exercise.
Yeah. Yes. And as we started at the top of the show and Jill was talking about how to find a physical therapist, there are also physical therapists who specialize in oncology. And they talk about energy saving techniques and how to exercise while still preserving energy so that they can do their daily activities. We have a physical therapist here at Research Park in the Spine Clinic who specializes in oncology. So depending upon where Carol and her husband live, they may want to track down a physical therapist who has specialization in oncology and see that person for one or two visits to establish that program that he can do at home.
Jeff in Wauwatosa emailed to say he was in physical rehab after a heart attack in summer. Then he got they got him into his best shape in years following, and now rehab's over and he doesn't have space or money for exercise equipment. And his doctor says, don't go to a fitness club during the pandemic. He was given resistance bands, and then they have given him almost the same resistance training that he got on rehab's big three station weight machine.
That's right. There are resistance bands of different levels that can provide really nice resistance to do strengthening for the large muscle groups. The bands come in different levels. And the nice thing about them is they don't take up space. They're relatively inexpensive. They're portable. So when we were traveling, we used to be able to say, you can take them with you. I don't think anyone's really traveling right now. But they're a really nice option for people to provide some sort of resistance training. We have them in our basement and we use them all the time.
Yeah, we do as well.
Joanne called to recommend to another caller that was experiencing pain from walking to pay attention to where they're walking. If the road has just a slight slope, it could cause a problem. Joanne switched from walking on the side of a more rural road where it's sloped to walking in the middle where it's more flat, and it's really helped her sciatic nerve. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're right. Roads have a cant to them, and so you have to take that under advisement. You know, it is risky to walk down the middle of a road, so that comes with its whole new set of potential issues. But yeah, looking at the pitch of the road or the pitch of where you're walking is very important. That's why sidewalks are great, because they're nice and level. In rural Wisconsin, not everyone has sidewalks, obviously.
Right. And that's kind of why we suggested that Judy go see a physical therapist to sort out those issues. It could be something with where she was walking, could be how she was walking. It could be an underlying asymmetry in her body from left to right, since she was only having symptoms on the left. But Joanne is absolutely right. That's one of the many factors we would ask you right from the get-go. Where are you walking? Is there a cant to it? What side do you walk on? So if you walk on a road, you're always going to have your left leg being the long leg. So,
did anyone catch the name of the walking pole brand that was mentioned earlier? I thought it was Pacer Pole, but
yeah, they are. They're Pacer Poles.
They're called Pacer Poles.
Pacer Poles,
and I'm not,
yeah.
I don't remember the brand itself, but if you look
at Pacer, just Google Pacer Poles and you'll find them.
And it was Pacer.
Yeah.
It was Pacer.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, in the last 30 seconds or so, any final words of wisdom?
Oh, just keep exercising. You've got to keep moving. You know, I think we gave you a lot of suggestions, like, you know, the stairs that that Joe brought up, and you know, up and down, standing, getting behind your chair and stretching, incorporating activity into all the things you do during the day.
Agreed. There's no reason you have to sit for a Zoom meeting. You can certainly stand and do some squats. As a matter of fact, I think this is probably the first meeting I've sat all the way through and haven't gotten up and run around a little bit. So try and do that as much as you can.
I love that idea, Lori, that you gave about putting your hand on your knee and then a little resistance and picking it up.
Yeah, that you really feel that engaged, don't you?
I was doing that during the show. You suggested, and you really can feel it.
Yeah,
that's a great
it's a
idea.
It's a great little exercise.
Well, and it's always great, speaking of great, to have you both with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit. You're on December 21st next time. So
wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Thanks
Larry.
Everybody.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, Lori Tine-Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They'll be back on December 21st. They're waving goodbye to me right now as we speak. Tomorrow on the show, we talk with Wisconsin veterinarian and writer Bill Stork about his new book of essays and observations on life. And at 11:45, we'll talk about Pancreas Cancer Awareness Month. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.